touchdown as he's ever caught. Soley looking for Owens. Jump ball. What a catch. Did you see that? It's first down. Cats inside the 15. Into the end zone. Chad Owens. Touchdown. Fifth touchdown pass of the night for Kolaros. That's a new career best.
Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham.
Mike, happy 2017 to you, sir. I hope you had a Merry Christmas. I know it's obviously over a month since the holidays, but I hope the new year is treating you well, and I hope you're ready to talk some Ticats football, some CFL football, and do it for the first time in the new year.
I'm ready to just jump into it, Josh.
Yeah, we have got a ton to talk about, so we're gonna cut the small talk. And we're going to sit here, we're going to talk some ball, we're going to get right into the Ticats news. A lot has happened since you and I last sat down and did one of these bad boys. The biggest news, I think, is obviously the loss of Orlando Steinhauer. He leaves the Ticats to head to Fresno State to be the defensive coordinator for the Bulldogs. And the Ticats took a little while, but didn't take too long in naming a replacement. And that is friend of the show and former special teams coordinator of the Hamilton Ticats, Mr. Jeff Reinbold. So, when you first heard the news of Steinhauer's leaving, how did you feel?
Well, I was a bit upset. You know, this guy, he's a great young mind, obviously defensive mind, and he's done some great things in Hamilton. He's made this defense feared again. You know, you think of Ticats football, and you think of hard-nosed defensive football, and he brought that back to the Hammer. So I was sad. I knew, we all knew as Ticat fans, it was eventually going to happen. He was eventually going to leave. I was a bit surprised that it was Fresno State. I didn't expect him to go to down south for an NCAA job. I just, you know, not that he's not capable of working there. It just never popped into my mind. I thought it would be a CFL head coaching job somewhere. But things happen and you got to move on. It was upsetting, but you know, that's football. So let's just move on and see what Reinbold brings to the table as defensive coordinator.
I'm glad we lost him not to another CFL team. I think if Steinhauer was going to leave, as he did, at least him going to the NCAA, or even if he would have gone to the NFL, if he would have got an opportunity there, which now that he's a defensive coordinator in the NCAA, the NFL opportunities are going to be there. I don't know if we might never see Orlando Steinhauer coach in the CFL again. He might be on a different career path now, which, you know, first off, like, kudos to him. Like, congratulations. I'm happy for him. I'm just really glad we didn't lose him to, say, the Argos, because we're going to get into the Argos situation, or mess, if you will, a little bit later. If that would have happened earlier, we might have seen Orlando Steinhauer as the head coach of the Toronto Argonauts. Now he's defensive coordinator in the NCAA. We don't have to worry about fans talking about how he's going to come back and burn us and all the stuff that always happens when the Ticats lose a coach or lose a player. But like you, yeah, it's time to move on. Like, congratulations to him, obviously. But yeah, we got Jeff Reinbold stepping up from special teams coordinator to defensive coordinator. What do you think about that move?
I think it's an interesting move. You know, we talked to Reinbold once on the show, and he's had a lengthy career in coaching. I think he said he's almost coached on every continent. And this guy has a wealth of experience. You know, I'm not in the locker room, but I'm pretty sure that the players really like him. He seems like a really good guy, really likable guy. So I think he's going to step in and do a great job. I don't think the schemes will change that much. He'll throw in his own ideas, obviously, just like he did with the special teams unit. He did a great job over the years with them. So I like the hire. I like the hire from within. I think it'll be an easy transition. So I'm happy with the move.
Yeah, I think the transition, I think that's a big reason why he was promoted. Not only because I think he's qualified. He has served as a defensive coordinator in this league before. He was the DC in Montreal in 2012. Didn't have the best of seasons there, but when he immediately moved to Hamilton after that season was over. And he's been one of the best special teams coordinators in the league. He's also was the linebackers coach the last 3 years, so he has some familiarity with the defensive players. They know what he's about. They know what he's like. I think it's a smart move to hire within. This does, however, leave his old job open, And Ken Austin said after he announced the hiring of Reinbold as defensive coordinator that they were looking outside the CFL and outside the team for a special teams coordinator. This is kind of interesting because now I don't know who they're going to get to replace him. They got big shoes to fill because the special teams units were some of the best through most of Reinbold's tenure. We talked about it last year. Special teams weren't great last season, but every now and then they like in the playoff game, they pull out the special trick plays that he was known for that we all loved. So any idea, any sort of like wish list or name you could think of that you would like to see as a special teams coordinator? Or is this because of what Austin said, one of those things where you're kind of just putting up your hands and going, I guess we're going to have to wait and see who they hire?
Yeah, I have no clue, to be honest with you. I don't even have any ideas from within the CFL, some like young and upcoming, you know, special teams minds that have been coaching, you know, maybe an assistant or something like that. I have no idea. And when they say that they're going to go outside the CFL, that makes it even more complicated. Like, I just have no clue who's going to come in, but you just got to trust them to make the right decision. And hopefully he can fill the shoes of Jeff Reinbold.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting change this year. We haven't seen a ton of coaches leave this team, but the last two off seasons have seen the Ticats lose their offensive coordinator and replace him, and now their defensive coordinator. But instead of finding someone outside the organization to make the move, it's the coaching continuity is what everyone looked at this team and said, okay, that's why they have been able to stay so good. And there's still some of that in it here, but hey, maybe fresh ideas will lead to some innovations and some new stuff on the field for the special teams unit. And that's never a bad thing. It's never a bad thing to sort of get new ideas in the clubhouse and stuff like that.
Absolutely. And you got you still got Speedy B back there returning kicks. And I think maybe the problem last year was personnel on the field. Maybe they lost some special teams demons that were, you know, really giving in their all when they were out there. And they just didn't have that last year. So hopefully they can find that, you know, chemistry again on the special teams unit, because Speedy B really didn't have a lot to work with last year. He didn't have a lot of room to run from what I saw. So hopefully we can get that back this year.
No, you're right. It's funny though. Like, he had what most would consider a down year, yet he still led the league in return touchdowns. So I don't know, maybe we've come to expect too much, or he just was so good those first few seasons here. It's kind of interesting. It's always like, I remember listening to people talk about, I watched a lot of NFL obviously recently with the Super Bowl upon us, and everyone's talking about how bad a season Aaron Rodgers was having for the Green Bay Packers, and the season ends and threw 40 plus touchdowns, he threw under 10 interceptions, and it's like that's a great season by anyone's measure. And but you put these guys on a pedestal and you expect them to be just so much better than everyone else that when they have a down season, even though it's better than anyone else's season, You're kind of, it's kind of a disappointment. It's funny. I don't think that Banks had the season he had hoped he would have, but he still had a pretty good one. But we as fans are like, well, we know we can do better. So it's just kind of funny how that kind of works out.
Yeah, it was just kind of a, you know, it was a good season, but kind of a meh season for Banks with the expectations that we have for him on the field.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Other piece of big news, Simone Lawrence signed a contract extension, so he's staying in Tigertown. I personally think that this is probably the sign that he's not really looking at the NFL anymore. He's pretty much said the CFL is his home. And this is a guy who, if you go by what he says on social media and from what I've heard privately, this guy loves it here. Absolutely loves it here. It seems to me like we're not going to sit here and discuss the merits of whether he deserved an extension, because I think that goes without saying. But this guy he's special. He's a special player. He's still so young. He's still like, I think he's 27, 28. Like, he's not even 30 years old yet. And he's had all-star seasons, defensive player of the year for the Ticats and for the East 2 years ago. He's on his way to cementing his legacy as one of this team's all-time greats, don't you think?
Absolutely. I could see his name being up on the, you know, the wall of honor at Tim Hortons Field one day. He just brings that attitude to the defense, you know, that Hamilton style of defense, the hard hitting, the trash talk, all that stuff. He's just a great player, a great ambassador for the team. I'm very happy that he's re-signed for a couple more years. And you're right, I think the NFL, you know, opportunities is over for him. He's looking past that. He's not, you know, dwelling on the past. Oh, I didn't make it here or whatever. He's happy to be with the Tiger Cats. He's happy to be in the CFL. And I'm happy that he's on the team for another couple of years, because every player leaves, and I'm sure at some point he will. You know, all the greats have left their teams at one point, but I got my fingers crossed that he's going to be a Tiger Cat for life.
Yeah, I'm sure, you know, he hits that mid-30s age when he's making too much money and maybe the play has declined, but I still think we got at least another 3, maybe 4 or 5 seasons left of top-notch play from this guy. And it's funny that we always go back to that trade that they made to bring him in, and it brought in Jeremiah Mazzoli and it brought in Greg Voigt, and they gave up, I think it was Carson Rockhill and Nathan Kanya, and it's like one of the most lopsided trades ever, like that I can think of. Like it makes that Ricky Ray trade almost look reasonable, as crazy as that is to say, because the Eskimos, Rockhill and Kanya are both out of the league, and Mazzoli was the starting quarterback here for a few games last year. Lawrence has turned into an all-star. Greg Voigt was an all-star the 1 year he was here where he was healthy. He mixed in that season. He ended up going back to Edmonton, and he's since retired. But talk about your lopsided trades to get a guy who, if he continues playing the way he's playing over the next 3, 4, 5 years, we're talking about a guy who's going to be in consideration for the Hall of Fame. And you don't get those guys very often. He's become this generation's, like, what Joe Montford was for us, like you and I, because we're of a certain age, what Angelo Mosca was for the generation before us, Covington and like Zambiazzi. That's what Simone Lawrence is turning into for this new generation of Ticats fans. And I myself am a huge fan, and I'm glad he's sticking around. But he's starting to cement himself as one of the all-time greats in this team's history. And it's kind of neat to get to witness that firsthand.
Yeah, it's you know, he's just an enjoyable player to watch. He's an entertaining player. He's a great player. He's the you know, one of the, if not the face, one of the faces of this franchise right now. You know, you think of Tiger Cats football, on the defense you automatically think of Simone Lawrence. You know, on the offense it could be Claros. It is Claros, but on defense you got to think Simone Lawrence when you think it's Tiger Cats defense.
Yeah, and he's got that, like, winning personality. He's got that smile. He's kind of like, in a lot of ways, he's Henry Burris like. He's one of those guys that I think if he's on your team, he's a guy you love, and if you have to play against him, you don't like him, because, like you said, he's always out there talking trash. He's out there having fun. He's getting in people's faces, and as long as he's a player on your squad, you're all behind him. But if he's ever against you, I can see why fans across the league might not like him. But I'm glad he's definitely still in black and gold and is going to be sticking around here for quite some time.
Absolutely. If he was an Argo, I'm sure that we would despise his trash talk and his attitude and all that stuff. But he's not. So we love him.
Oh, absolutely. Much like we despised Chad Owens, then he came here and he became everyone's favorite player, myself included.
Yeah, exactly.
So the Ticats have also, over the last little while, re-signed some players, and they've brought some new players in. There's not much to talk about here with the guys. I think the big one that they re-signed was Mike Daly, which I think was a no-brainer, bringing him back. We've seen him start in this league for this team numerous times. Obviously a key member of the special teams unit. They re-signed Landon Rice. They re-signed Delano Johnson. They re-signed a couple of Canadian linebackers in Mitch Barrett and Jeff Hughes. They re-signed Cassius Vaughn, which has brought a bit of controversy on social media amongst Ticat fans, so we can get into that a little bit. And they re-signed Travis Lee. So I don't want to get into the debate of, like, which is the best re-signing or what have you, because I don't really think – none of these players, I think, are, like, starting players. Maybe Johnson could be a starter next year if the team loses Drake Nevis to free agency. I think that may be a reason why they brought Johnson back. He's the possible guy that's going to play next to Ted Laurent next season as that American defensive tackle. But so I don't really want to get into, well, who do you think is the best re-signing? Because they're all kind of – they're role players. They're spot starters at best, and special teams guys mostly. But I do want to talk about the Vaughn signing, because I'm sure you saw the social media uproar at his being brought back. We talked about him a lot last season, and I would say we were less than kind to his play on the field. Drew Edwards, my editor at Three Down Nation, wrote a piece about the fans talking about Vaughn's re-signing and how they were against it, and laid out a case about why the team brought him back. You know, he didn't get a training camp with them last year. He admitted himself that he didn't really grasp the magnitude of playing in the CFL and the fields. Like, he understood that he didn't have the greatest of seasons. And I've talked to a few guys, Brian Simmons most notably, about coming into the CFL and that first year when you're here not really being able to do anything, being really frustrated at how the game is different than what you've been playing your entire life. And then year two kind of getting it. So maybe the Ticats are looking at that going, we're going to give this guy an offseason to be here. We're going to give him a training camp and see what he can do. So maybe this isn't a terrible, terrible signing. They obviously see something in the kid. And maybe we're just laymen and don't really notice, because I don't know about you, but I don't watch DB play all that much. I just remember he got beat a lot last year. So where do you kind of stand? Are you in that group where, not a hell with this guy, he was terrible last year, he'll never be good? Or are you in a more wait-and-see mode?
I'm a wait-and-see kind of approach. I wasn't pleased with his play on the field last year, but you're right. He was – not only was he brought in, he was thrown into the fire. I mean, he was starting – out of nowhere. Like, it's got to be tough to come into the CFL after playing four down football your whole life and being a starter right away. And yeah, he got burned a lot, and he wasn't the greatest DB on the field, but yeah, I'm a wait and see kind of guy. Like you said, they obviously have a lot of faith in him, because we've seen guys come in and have like one or two bad games and you never hear about them again. They stuck with Vaughn for the last, you know, whatever it was, five or six games of the playoffs. And I believe he started or the last five or six games of the regular season. And I believe he started in the playoffs. So they obviously are very high on him. Yeah, we're just going to have to see it, you know, with the full training camp. He has a lot of talent, I'm sure, because Austin's and company are great talent evaluators. So hopefully he gets the training camp and he's a totally different player. That's my hope. I don't know if it's gonna happen, but that's what I hope happens.
I do remember him being pretty decent on returns, not a burner.
Remember the one game? Yeah, the one game. We saw him the one game, and it was just, I was impressed at his speed and the way that he moved when he was returning the punts.
Yeah, it's like he found the holes a lot. Like, his vision on punts was a lot better than I expected it to be. And it's not, and obviously his job is to be the best DB he can be, but adding a second skill set is never a bad thing. And having a guy who can back up, who's probably making the minimum money, like, this guy's not making $150,000, he's making the minimum. It's nice to have a guy like that who, in case a guy like Banks does go down — we've seen Banks get hurt before, he's not immune to injury — it's nice to have a backup plan in that, and a guy who's not going to, you know, kill the cap, so to speak. But I do want to see some improvement in him. He's a guy that I'm going to be paying very close attention to in the preseason. Chances are this team's going to we know they're going to have a home preseason game, and as a season ticket holder, I have tickets to that game already. They're probably going to play their second preseason game against Toronto, and I think in the last I've been a season ticket holder now since 2009, so in the last seven seasons, I think I've gone to that preseason. I think I've only missed it once, maybe twice. So chances are, if they play a preseason game in Toronto, I'm going to be at that one too and get a chance to watch him. So if I get a chance to see both preseason games, I'm going to keep an eye on him. And I'm going to come back and report on it in June. I know it's only January, we're already talking about June, but hey, you know, it's football, man. We want the season to be here as soon as possible. I'm going to keep a keen eye on him and see if he has improved. I know you can't really glean a lot from the preseason, because teams are pretty vanilla and not everybody is – all the starters are playing. But it'll be interesting to see if he has indeed picked up and sort of progressed from where he was last season.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to be keeping an eye on him as well. And who knows, he might be a cut in training camp, or he might be a starter in the defensive backfield next season.
Yeah, you never know. That's the thing about signing guys like this, is we're gonna spend 5 minutes talking about him, and he could be gone at first cuts because he didn't cut the mustard.
I'm sure they're gonna bring in a ton of DBs in training camp this season.
Well, you know what, man? You should be in the business of handing out segues, because you just got me right into the next point, which is a bunch of players this team has signed. The two off the top are a pair of American defensive backs, Keon Lynn and Alex Ofori Jr. So those could be guys. Again, I'll go through the list of guys that they brought back or that they've signed. It's silly for us to sit here and kind of debate, because I've never seen any of these guys play. So I don't know if these guys are any good. They've also This is a sort of a bring back. Matt Urin was a 2016 draft pick that saw a little bit of playing time last year, but not much, but they brought him back. Felix Faubert-Lucier, who was a 2016 draft pick as well. He was with Laval, if I'm not mistaken, on the Vanier Cup winning team this past November. So they drafted him, they released him and let him go back to Laval. They're bringing him in. Elroy Douglas, another DB, a Canadian this time. He was a 2016 draft pick. And they brought in another Canadian DB in Tyler Story. So none of these guys are I know we're pretty smart fans, but we're not this smart to be able to pick apart these guys. But like you said, they're going to bring in a ton of DBs, and they already have in Lynn and Axel, who that's just an awesome name. If your name's Axel, I'm going to be a fan.
You like Axel Rose?
I didn't mind Guns N' Roses. I don't think they're very good now, but I didn't. You know, hey, welcome to the jungle, man. That's a kick-ass tune. Hey, it was Bam.
Yeah,
Bam,
and
Bigelow's,
you know, we look
music
at these players. Was it?
Welcome, yeah, when he was in ECW.
Or in ECW?
Bam Bigelow's entrance music was Welcome to the Jungle. And I don't know about you, man, but I'm a big fan of the Bammer.
I just remember, Bam, Bam,
yeah,
Bam, Bam, in WWF.
Yeah, which was that was a terrible entrance song.
It was pretty bad. But yeah, you look at these players and, you know, I don't know them. I don't recognize them. But they could be the future, so you never really know. You know, the draft picks are tough to unless you're really into the CIS or you're watching every NCAA game, you don't know these guys, but they could be huge stars in the future. So, you know, keep an eye on them.
So, hey, like I said, we can't really talk a ton about that, so we'll just move on to the next thing. Last little piece of Ticats news. It came out today as we record this on a Monday. Byron Archambeau, another Ticats draft pick from a few years ago, has joined the coaching staff of the Montreal Caravans. So I assume that means he's retired from the CFL. There hasn't been anything official, but I think if he's taken a job somewhere else, chances are his job as a professional football player is no longer.
Yeah, and he was a good linebacker in the CIS for the Caravan. I believe they won a Vanier Cup when he was there, or were in one, or were close to one. I can't remember. But
No, you're right. They won.
Yeah,
one.
It was
they beat McMaster.
Yep. Oh, yep, yep. So, you know, I was kind of excited when he got drafted, but he's had some injury troubles over the years, and maybe he figured that he should move on with his career because maybe he just figured that he didn't have very long of a playing career ahead of him.
Yeah, and you see this from time to time. You especially see it a lot more now, even with NFL players, with the amount of money they make. You're seeing guys after a year or two say, you know what, it's not worth my long-term health to play this game. I'm going to look into my post-football career, and that's what he's doing. Obviously, he would have, if he gets into coaching, he does well. He's going to have a much longer career as a football coach than he ever would as a football player. So, you know, I wish him luck over there in Montreal with the Caravan. And, I too am a little bummed because I remember, I think he was the top guy on the bench press the year he came out at the CFL Combine. And he looked like he could be a guy that could be that stud special teams contributor. But, you know, injuries derail great careers sometimes. We know firsthand with Jesse Lumsden, the guy looked like $1 million when he was on the field, but just his body couldn't stand up to the punishment and unfortunately had to call it a career early. Same with Archambeau here. It's a shame because I never want to see these guys leave. I want to see them be able to have long, fulfilling careers, but he's got to do what's best for him. So I wish him luck and hope he enjoys his life after being off the football field.
Yeah. And, you know, he obviously loves the game of football because he's sticking around in the sport. So I'm glad that he can continue to be involved in football.
Okay, so we got the Ticats stuff out of the way, and now we get to the massive amounts of crazy news from the league as a whole. And we have to start. I was going to do this in chronological order, and then I thought, no, there's no Barry in the lead here. We have to start in Toronto. What in the bloody hell is going on with the Toronto Argonauts? One week they fire Jim Barker. This is taking place in January. We recorded, I think it was the end of December, I think just before Christmas, if I'm not mistaken. And we talked about, you know, what I think we even talked about what's going to happen in Toronto. Then nothing happened until the end of January when Jim Barker is fired. And then less than a week later, Scott Milanovic resigns. This team is now free agency. CFL free agency opens on Valentine's Day. We are about 2 weeks away from that as we sit here tonight. And this team doesn't have a general manager or a head coach. I'm at a loss as to how crazy this is.
It is. It's unbelievable. You know, the new ownership comes in, Bell and Tannenbaum. You think that things are going to change in Toronto. Things are going to be organized. There's going to be marketing. They're going to get better on the field. But nothing has happened like that. It's just been one tire fire after another. You know, the disappointing attendance, the terrible play on the field, and now this with Barker getting fired and Milanovic leaving. I mean, what are they going to do? They better pull up their socks pretty quick, because we're getting close to free agency, like you said. The draft is coming up in May. I know that's quite a bit of ways, but you know, there's a lot of planning that goes into these things, and no one's there to head the ship, you know, to take this in the right direction. It's quite troubling as a CFL fan, and if I was an Argos fan, I would be mortified, to be honest. I mean, imagine if the Ticats didn't have a GM, didn't have a coach in February now almost. I mean, it's January 30th right now, and nothing's happening for the Argos. So they better figure it out quick, and they better have a good plan. I mean, I don't even know if they have a plan. It's really troubling to look at this franchise right now, off and on the field.
A couple of things. One, as a San Francisco 49ers fan, I feel bad for Argos fans right now. I deal with, as a fan, maybe the worst ownership in professional sports with the 49ers, who have fired three coaches in the last 3 years. They are god-awful, and they don't know what the hell they're doing. And I look at that, and I would not wish that on anybody. What Argo fans are going through right now, it's almost February, and this team no longer has a general manager or a head coach. I remember last year when the Ticats lost Tommy Condell in like April, and it was like, this is terrible. And it was like, you don't want to lose a coach that late. Offensive coordinator, you can fix that. Like you can work around that. This team is without someone to sign players, or someone who has a coaching philosophy to find the right players to work in the system he wants to install. This also means that they're without any assistant coach. Like, this team does not know what they're doing going into next year. And like I keep saying, they're 2 weeks away from free agency. They have players unsigned. Unfortunately for whoever comes in, they got to inherit Drew Willey, because this team with Jim Barker, as he should have, negotiated a contract extension with Drew Willey. This team, he negotiated a contract extension with Sean Lemon. We saw with Sean Lemon last year going to Saskatchewan. If he's not a fit for the system you want to put in, he's going to be out of there. He's not a guy who can work in any system. He has a very specific set of skills. He does it very well, don't get me wrong, but we saw that if he's not utilized the way he wants to be utilized, he will force his way out of town. So they've spent money on Willie, they spent money on Lemon, and we don't know if they're going to work in that system. Speaking of Willie, when he was traded to Toronto, everyone was like, he's done as a quarterback. There's no way he's going to be a starter. But the one thing was always like, he sucks, .. But Scott Milanovic could turn him around. That's not there anymore. Milanovic is now tasked with turning around Blake Bortles in Jacksonville. So now whichever coach comes in, an offensive coordinator comes in, they're going to have to deal with a Drew Willey, who clearly has no confidence left in him whatsoever, and who looked god-awful both in Winnipeg and in Toronto last year. This is just a mess. And personally for me, I think if I'm going to find someone to blame for this, I throw it at the feet of their team president, Michael Copeland. He used to work for the league, and then when Bell and Tannenbaum bought the team, he took the job as president of the Argos, or CEO of the Argos, whatever the title is. And it's just, he's taken loss after loss after loss. Like you mentioned, the team, the move to BMO is great, and I think it's going to work for the long-term viability of this franchise. But they promised things in year one, we're going to sell out every game, that they came nowhere close to accomplishing. Then you had the team on the field was just terrible. I think they lost 11 of their last 12 games. Like, I think they started 4-2 and finished 5-13. That is just, you have to be pretty bad to lose 11 of 12 games. That's almost inconceivable. And then you had the whole Grey Cup ticket fiasco, which falls at their feet. They got saved because the game was excellent, but otherwise that was a complete disaster. And now you have this. It's, if they don't hit a home run with whomever they hire as GM and head coach, this to me, and I've talked about this, and we talked about it off mic, and I've talked to other people about this, this is either one of those things where this team is going to be flirting with a winless season, or we're going to be sitting here in November going, how the hell did the Argos win the Grey Cup? There's no in between. They're either going to use this as motivation to show everyone that they're wrong, or this thing's going to completely fall apart. And as we sit here right now, I'm leaning towards the latter. I don't see how this can go anywhere but down.
Yeah, it's funny what a difference a year makes. I mean, in the offseason last year, we were both really high on the Argos. And now it's this year's offseason, and I have to agree with you. I don't think they have a chance. I really don't at this point anyways. The Drew Willie thing, I mean, that was Milanovic's guy. That he wanted him. He saw something in him. And now it's like whoever comes in, they're going to have to deal with him unless they bring back Ray. And, you know, Ricky Ray was a great quarterback in this league, one of the best I've seen, but I don't think he is anymore. I think you have to give him build like amazing pieces around him for him to be effective. And, you know, they release all those receivers last season, late in the season. That was Milanovic and a Barker move. And, you know, you could kind of see the perspective. Maybe they had bad attitudes or whatnot, but that was a lot of talent that they just let go. I mean, Hazelton just re-signed in Edmonton. Torrey Gurley's a really great receiver. There was a couple other that I'm blanking on right now. But
Kevin Elliott last year came in here and was balled out Kevin in the last two games. Yeah. He looked awesome as a tight end.
Yeah, I mean, these guys are talented receivers, and they're you know, building from scratch in that position right now. They have some talent there. Deontay Spencer, I like him, and Kenny Shaw, he's a talented player, and they got some.
But
you know,
both
Anthony
those guys
Toombs,
are Mike,
some
both
Canadian.
Those guys are free agents. They haven't been re-signed yet. And if this team doesn't have a general manager, yeah. Who the hell's going to sign him and bring him back?
Well, hey, who's going to re-sign him? I mean, this is a disaster right now. I mean, to lose your offensive coordinator and defensive coordinator, you know, that's bad enough. But these guys are the leaders of football operations, the GM and the head freaking coach. I mean, they're going to have to pull a rabbit out of their hats to turn this thing around, to turn the PR around on it, to get some respectability back with the Argos. I mean, it's just a bad situation right now. And you talk about Copeland. I mean, it seemed like, okay, we have tailgating, boom, problem solved.
Yeah.
It's not even real tailgating. I mean, I'm sure it's a great experience, and I would love to get down there to do that, but it's not authentic tailgating. You can't just throw tailgating out there and be like, okay, you know, people will show up. Argos are alive again. It just didn't happen. And the Grey Cup thing was a disaster. It's just there was a lot of arrogance coming into this season that they could just turn it around like that. And obviously it didn't happen.
I also wonder, both Barker and Milanovic signed 3-year contract extensions just last year. So both those guys have 2 years remaining on the deal. Now, Milanovic has obviously taken another job with the Jacksonville Jaguars as a quarterbacks coach, but that's some money that the Argos are going to have to eat. Milanovic probably not, because he's probably making as much, if not more, as a QB coach in the NFL. But are they going to cheap out on whomever they hire? Like, the list of whom they can hire is very small. Because at this point, teams across the league have solidified their front offices, and they've solidified their coaching staffs, and they're not going to really be that keen on, in late January, early February, granting their guys permission to interview another team when these guys have been involved with whatever team they're on now, their draft strategy, their free agency strategy. They're not going to want to hand that information over to a rival, despite the fact that we sat here a year ago and said the Red Blacks were arrogant and wrong for not letting someone advance in Jason Moss and trying to hold him back. If this would have happened at this time last year, I would have probably sided with Ottawa a lot more, because you can't simply allow these guys who have been in these meetings and trying to establish what their team currently is going to do, and let them walk with that information to a competitor. That is a competitive disadvantage for the teams that they came from. So are they going to have, they're going to have to look outside the CFL. Now, if the Argos come in with the 1-2 combination of we've hired Jim Popp and he's bringing Mark Trestman with us, they're going to get a lot of leeway there. But I don't see something like that happening, because those are big money contracts, and they got this money sitting there that's going to eat a hole in their pocket with the Jim Barker deal that they got to pay him for 2 more years. This is just like disaster written all over it.
Yeah, and if they go outside and bring in an NFL guy and it's a disaster, I mean, that could just be the worst thing. That, like, if he's another Bart Andrews, I mean, that could be the worst thing that this franchise has ever done for itself.
Yeah,
Now
it could set them back years. They're already up against the eight ball with being in a Toronto market where the Toronto Maple Leafs are all of a sudden actually good. Like, they're not the best team in the NHL, but they're a team that people are excited for. They got a lot of young talent. That Auston Matthews kid is setting the world on fire, and people are loving it. When the Leafs are good, no other team in that city matters. And the Argos had a window here, as did all the other teams. The Raptors, TFC, they all had a window here with the Leafs the last decade, basically, where they were garbage, to do something. And they lost it. And now they're even falling further down the landscape because the Leafs are back in the conversation for making the playoffs. And they look like they're a team that's building towards something that might actually be, you know, holy shit, the Leafs are actually good. But so the Argos have got to do something. I just look at it and go, like, bad timing, bad everything. This is just this. There's nothing positive to take from this whatsoever.
And who's going to want to come in? I mean, if you bring in Pop and Trestman, which I don't think is going to happen because of, you know, reports that I think Herb Sukowski out of Montreal said that he's pretty much positive that Jim Pop isn't going to the Argos, especially this season. So it's just going to be hard to find quality coaching, quality GM this late in the juncture. I mean, it's almost February here. You hire someone right now and they're going to have to, you know, get right at it, you know, hit the pavement running. You know what I mean? Like, they don't have a lot of time to figure this out. And that's going to be a tough sell to bring in someone of quality.
It's almost like they have to go, who was the assistant general manager in Toronto last year? There's your GM. Name a guy on the coaching staff that would be interested in being a head coach. And that's a terrible way to do business. They brought in Tommy Condell as a special advisor. I would not be shocked if he is at worst the offensive coordinator for that team next year, if not the head coach, to be honest with you.
What the hell is a special advisor? I mean, I was surprised he got that title. I thought they'd bring him in as OC or something, but I guess Marcus Brady's there, isn't he?
Yeah, but like all their assistant contracts were up. Like, they don't have a coaching staff. Like, there was no talk about because like you saw with Ottawa and Calgary specifically that I can remember, they gave out releases where we're retaining our entire staff. Here's the guys we're keeping. Here's, you know what I mean? We haven't seen a thing from Toronto. I would not be shocked if Tommy Condell was brought in with the idea that we're going to look around, but you're our number one guy. So come in, we'll give you a paycheck. You'll help us. It's kind of like Dick Cheney, when George W. Bush is looking for a vice presidential candidate, when George W. Bush is running for president the first time, he hired Dick Cheney on as an advisor to help him vet any possible VP candidates. And then Cheney just hired himself and said, I'm going to be your vice president. Like, I'm going to be your running mate. It almost seems like that, where they bring in Condell and it's like Condell's going to help them pick he's a special advisor. He's going to help pick the head coach. He's going to help with the gym. I have no idea. But it's almost like he's going to bring himself in and go, okay, well, I'm going to help you pick this and I'm going to be the head coach. You know what I mean? Like, that's almost what this feels like. I would be shocked if Condell is not in some way on this Argos staff in the 2017 season.
Yeah, I'd be shocked too. I mean, I think he's a good offensive football mind. He proved that in Hamilton. So that's one positive thing, I guess, for the Argos.
I guess. Another possible positive thing is, I don't know if you've seen this, but I've seen some comments from people, speaking of the Argos, about the possibility, and this was even before all this mess happened, that Chad Owens could return to Toronto. This seems to be this rumor that's floating out there that Owens will head back to Toronto. It was a one-year stop in Hamilton, but he's going to go back to TO. He's going to play there. And now that Jim Barker's gone, who was a guy that I don't mean to say this in a mean way, but he was the guy that deemed Owens expendable, didn't want to keep him. Now that he's gone, maybe the new guy will bring him back. And like we said, I think I said this to you before we recorded, this team needs a PR win. And if you were to tell the fans, hey, guess what? Number two, our MOP, he's coming back home. I think that would be a big PR win for the Argos. Obviously, we saw with Owens last year, the guy can still play. So it's not like they'd be bringing him back purely for a PR purpose. But this would be a major public relations win if they were to bring Owens back to Toronto. What do you think? Do you think we might see him back in double blue? He might be public enemy number one again? Because I got to be honest with you, Mike, I kind of like cheering for the guy last year.
Oh, he's fun to watch. He's an exciting player on the field. I would not be shocked if he went back there. I mean, yes, he was let go last year, but I think that he's, you know, you look back on his career, unless he re-signs in Hamilton and has like a couple great seasons, the average CFL fan is going to look back on Chad Owens' career and think Argos, right? So like you said, I think it'd be a good move on the field and off the field. He was the face of the franchise for, you know, half a decade or maybe a little bit more than that. So yeah, I would not be shocked if he re-signed with the Argos.
So the Argos have kind of taken the mantle of most dysfunctional CFL organization away. Yeah,
where's Pinball too? Where's Pinball?
Where is Pinball?
Where's Pinball? I mean, this guy was the most famous Argo probably ever in the city. He's just not with the team, it doesn't seem. I don't know if he's officially still hired by them. I think that there was some friction between him and David Braley. But now that he's gone, you think that he would be more involved with the team. I follow him on Twitter. He seems to tweet more about the Raptors or the other Toronto teams. I think that there's like some bad feelings between Pinball and the Argos. That's just my personal opinion. I haven't heard anything from anyone. I just think that there's some bad feelings there.
You rumor starting son of a bitch.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
I honestly think there is, because I think that if there wasn't, he would be front and center promoting this team.
I can't disagree with you. There's no one who bleeds double blue more than Mike Pinball Clemens, and you're right. He is easily the face of that franchise, period, from whenever. I don't think there's anyone – there's no one alive. No, like anyone who played, you know, 60, 70 years ago, obviously the people who followed them, but – I don't think there's anyone who you could say is more synonymous with Argos football than Mike Clemens. The closest that's ever come to that, in my mind, was Chad Owens. Chad Owens did kind of seem to fill, not to the extent that Pinball did, because Pinball was one of those guys who, even though he played for Toronto, I don't think you'd find a Ticats fan that would say anything negative about Pinball. Owens, it wasn't the same thing, but he was the closest that team has come since Pinball to having a guy be, you know, basically Mr. Argo, and his silence is kind of deafening. I will agree with you on that, sir.
Yeah, so I just thought I'd throw it out there. I've been thinking about that for a while. Where is Pinball, and why is he not more involved? But I don't know. We'll see if maybe down the road he gets more involved.
Yeah, hey, you know what? He's a pretty darn good head coach for that team back in the early 2000s.
Yeah, I was
watching sports. I know he left because he didn't want to be a coach anymore, but he had a knack for being a head coach. Those teams were veteran-laden, and they did win a Grey Cup, but he was a pretty darn good head coach.
Yeah, when the story broke on SportsCenter, they had, like, top five wins for the Argos, and I was surprised to see that he had 60-something wins as an Argos head coach. You know, I was heavily, you know, I was watching the CFL at the time. I was heavily invested in the CFL, and I just didn't think that he won that many games or that he coached that long for the Argos, but I guess he did.
He did indeed. So what I was going to say before we got into the Pinball discussion was the Argos are now the league's dumpster. It used to be the Montreal Alouettes, but it seems as if they've kind of got their ducks in a row. Now this is obviously old news, but you and I haven't had a chance to discuss it. They named a general manager and they named a head coach, and it's Cavis Reid in the GM chair, and Jacques Chapdelain had the interim tag removed from the head coaching position. So what do you think about these two hires?
I think that it was, you know, the Cavis Reid thing was kind of shat on by a lot of the fans and all that. You know, people always talk about consequences. So that's all that they remember about Cavis Reid. But reading the reports from, you know, the insiders and all that, he seems to be really respected by the players and respected by, you know, head office guys and coaches around the league. So yes, he's never been a GM before, but I don't think it was a terrible move. And to have Jacques Chapdelaine come back as head coach, I think is a good PR move for the French-speaking folks in Quebec. And, you know, they performed pretty well under him. Not great, but I thought that he turned it around a bit in the later stages of the season last year. So I'm glad to see that they kind of stabilized, because, you know, the last five, 6-7 years, it's been a rotating thing in Montreal, you know, bringing in coaches, letting coaches go, Jim Popp head coach, Jim Popp not head coach. You know, it's just been kind of a mess ever since Calvillo left. So it's good to see stability with the Alouettes, and I expect them to do good things. I think they have talent on the field, and hopefully this stability brings people back to the stadium, where, you know, the Montreal Alouettes were a hot ticket 5-10 years ago. Now, not so much. So I don't hope that they have great success on the field, but I hope that they have great success off the field. Same as with the Argo situation.
Yeah, we'll get into the big player acquisition they made in a little bit, but we'll focus on just the front office and the coaching staff right now. The hirings were questionable. I think the Reed one more so than the Chapdelaine one. It's odd to see a team that really kind of needs that stability that you mentioned, bring in a guy with absolutely no front office experience. That doesn't mean he can't do the job. Ken Austin took over when he took over the Ticats, had no front office experience in. This team's been to the playoffs every year under his watch. I know that there's people out there for some reason who think this guy should be fired and should have been fired long ago. I'm not here to debate that or talk about that at all, but it just says that you don't necessarily need front office experience to be successful, and I think you can't say that Ken Austin has been anything but successful. The only thing he hasn't done with this franchise is win a Grey Cup, and I think that's going to happen sooner rather than later. So bringing Reed in, it's an interesting choice, but again, you never know how something like that could work out. The Chapdelaine hire, again, I think they went something like 4-2 with him as head coach, but that's a little skewed because they were playing teams like the last week of the season, they played Hamilton and beat them, and Hamilton was playing for absolutely nothing. So they played a Calgary team that didn't even start Mitchell. So you can look at it in two ways. People who want to use it as, they went 4-2 with him as head coach and use it as a good thing. There's people who can then use it to knock them down because of who they played. But neither here nor there. I don't think these are terrible moves. I honestly don't. And I think probably if we would have discussed it immediately in the aftermath, I probably would have had a more negative view of it. But they haven't done anything crazy since these two guys have been announced. And I think if they have a plan in place, and that's the thing that I'm hoping for, I hope they have a plan in place. And if they do, maybe these are the two guys that can best execute it, and the Alouettes will go back to being one of the teams to compete in the East.
And you look at, I don't know if you want to get into the Darian Durant hiring right now.
We might as well go, you know what, if you're ready to go there, let's go there.
All right, well, I believe, now correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that Darian Durant had his best years when Jacques Chapdelaine was the offensive coordinator in Saskatchewan.
You're right. I think you are correct.
Yeah. Yep. So there's that relationship that's already built, that familiarity with the offensive schemes of Jacques Chapdelaine. So the quarterback carousel has been, just spinning constantly for the Alouettes. The names, we could go through them right now, but I'm having a hard time remembering them all. There's been so many quarterbacks after the Calvillo era.
Oh, Jesus Christ, dude! It's a list as long as my arm.
Exactly. It's a failure after failure, it seems. So, they bring in a guy like Darian Durant, who I think still has some years left in him. He's proven himself over his career in the CFL that he's a capable quarterback. He's a Grey Cup winning quarterback. So, yeah, I think that bringing in Durant stabilizes that position, the most important position on the football field. And I think they can only go up from here, unless he, but you could say this about any player, unless he gets injured.
Well, obviously, that caveats with every single player in every single sport. Mm-hmm. So the details of the Durant move, the Riders traded him to Montreal. Montreal gave up a fourth round pick in the 2017 draft and a conditional second round pick in the 2018 draft. And then almost immediately Durant signed a 3-year extension with the Alouettes. So that definitely solidifies their quarterback future for at least the next 3 years. Again, barring injury, of course. I think it's a great move. I really do. I don't think Durant was going to stay in Saskatchewan. I think the writing was on the wall there. I think that they were at an impasse that was just never going to be, so probably similar to the Chad Owens thing. You lowball them and they're disrespected and they don't want to take it. They're going to think they're worth more because of how long they've been there. I think that the Riders got the best they could in trading him to Montreal. I think Montreal did well because now they have a quarterback that they can have a quarterback now. They have a veteran guy there who I still think has a lot left in the tank. And they still have Vernon Adams behind him, who didn't look too terrible last year, who can sit and kind of learn from Durant maybe for a year or two and then be ready to take over this team. In the CFL, it's never bad for the young quarterbacks to sit and learn. Look at the guys that we've seen, Zach Caleros, Trevor Harris, Bo Levi Mitchell, Mike Riley. All those guys were backups when they first – Anthony Calvillo, Kevin Glenn. All these guys who have become starters and very good players in this league started off as backups. There are very few guys that you see in this league Ricky Ray and Doug Flutie are the two that pop into my head who were pretty much starters immediately. But even Ray, he sat behind Moss for a few games before he finally got in there. So guys sit and they learn and they get used to the game and then they can come in. Learning from behind a guy like Darian Durant can only do good things for Vernon Adams.
Yeah, and Rakeem Cato. I mean, these are two quarterbacks that have shown that they do have talent, that they are capable at times of playing good football up in the CFL. So, yeah, I think it's a good thing for them to have that kind of mentor come in and show them the ropes.
So the Durant move then necessitated the Riders making a move to bring in a quarterback. And not only did they bring in a quarterback, but they brought in a pretty darn good receiver for him to throw to. They signed Kevin Glenn once again for his third go-around in Saskatchewan. He's probably, if I'm looking at this correctly, probably going to be the starter in Saskatchewan this year, at least to start the season. And they gave him a guy to throw to in signing Daron Carter, which you say what you want about the guy's personality or how he is off the field, but on the field, the guy is probably the most talented player in this league. If he has his head on straight, he's the best receiver in the CFL and probably the best player in the CFL. And that makes that Riders receiving corps, which already had Naaman Roosevelt, which had a guy in Ricky Collins Jr. who exploded last year and kind of came onto the scene. He was a little up and down, but he had his good games. They still got Rob Begg. I'm high on the Riders making the move. We all know, you especially, how big of a fan I am of Kevin Glenn. So I think this is a pretty good move by the Riders. It's not Darian Durant, but if they had Darian Durant, they don't get Daron Carter. And that's sort of the trade-off you make. Are the Riders better with Glenn and Daron Carter than they would be with Durant and nobody? I think they are.
It's questionable, in my opinion. Glenn and Daron Carter were together last year, and they didn't necessarily light the world on fire, but it's an interesting move bringing in Glenn. The guy just won't go away, and I don't dislike him or anything. I just don't know how far he can take the Riders if he's the starter. And we've all heard the rumors that they want James Franklin, and I don't think that's going to happen necessarily, because I think the Eskimos still really want him to be the backup at Edmonton. But I don't know. I just expected something different from Saskatchewan. I didn't expect them to sign Glenn again. I'm a wait-and-see type attitude. I think that he's still a capable quarterback, and I think that there's going to be a lot of talent around him, but I don't know how far he can take this team. I think that I thought that Chris Jones would want more of a long-term solution in Saskatchewan, opposed to bringing in Kevin Glenn, a 37-year-old quarterback.
Maybe he sees that long-term solution already on the roster, and we just don't see it. If you would have told anybody in 2012 that two future starters were the second and third string QBs in Toronto behind Ricky Ray, people would have called you crazy. Who the hell is Zach Collaros and who the hell is Trevor Harris? No one would have thought that those guys would be starters in this league. So perhaps the guys they have on the roster already, I think if I'm not mistaken, they have Brandon Bridge, who I don't think can be a starter in this league. People disagree with me on that. They call me anti-Canadian because they think I'm just against him because he's a Canadian quarterback. But I think he's got a lot of work to do before he can be considered a viable starter in this league. They have Jake Waters, who they got from Hamilton in a trade last year. And I know they got a couple other guys on that roster whose names are just escaping me at the moment, which is poor research on my part, and I'll take the blame for that. But I feel like Glenn is only a stopgap solution. But this team, after two straight seasons of missing the playoffs, walking into that beautiful new stadium they have, if this team can get to 500 to make the playoffs, I think fans in Saskatchewan will be happy.
Oh, I think that would be a huge success. And I think that Jones brought in some guys near the end of the season. You know, Saskatchewan didn't look like a terrible football team in game 16, 17, 18, 19 of the season. So I think they made improvements throughout the season on the defense, on the offense. I think they still need to make some improvements on the offensive line to, if it's going to be Glenn, he's going to need some time back there. And I think he can still, I think they can win a lot of games with Glenn behind quarterback, behind center. I was just a little surprised that he was brought in again. I don't know who he's going to sign with next. It just seems like his career won't end. And it's not that I want it to end. It just seems like it keeps going and going and going. So it's a funny situation.
Well, he's that perfect insurance policy because he's a guy who will accept a backup role with your team. He's done it Now, pretty much since he left Hamilton, he's been willing to go somewhere and be the backup, and he just always gets thrust into the starter's role, and he's not always successful. He's been on some, to be fair, some piss-poor teams the last couple of years. He was a backup.
Now, let me ask you a question.
Sure.
Would you be cheering for Kevin Glenn in the Grey Cup if he was the Riders quarterback? Would you be cheering for the Riders?
Who are they playing in the Grey Cup?
Oh, let's say Toronto.
So they're not playing the Ticats?
No, they're not playing the Ticats. Any team but the Ticats.
Then yes. I would cheer for the Riders. I would cheer for Kevin Glenn.
Slide on your green. Put on your green for the day.
I would. You know what I would do? I have a Kevin Glenn Ticats jersey. I have put it away. I would take it out, and I would wear it while watching the Grey Cup, and I would cheer on Kevin Glenn. I like Kevin Glenn. And you know what? It would be, the Riders. You know what? If Kevin Glenn got his ring, it's the last thing he needs. If he gets a ring, and I'm not saying they're going to win the Grey Cup this year. I don't think they are. But if he's the starting quarterback there and they win the Grey Cup, he goes to the Hall of Fame.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
That's all that's missing from his resume. He's like top 10 in everything, and he just doesn't have the Grey Cup ring. He gets that. He's in the Hall of Fame. I would absolutely, without a doubt, cheer for Kevin Glenn and the Saskatchewan Roughriders in the Grey Cup if they get there. You can mark that down right now. January 30th, 2017, I said I'd cheer for the Riders. Now, if they're playing the Ticats, absolutely not.
No, obviously, yeah.
But any other team, I'm cheering for the Riders. If they get into the playoffs in the West, I'm cheering for them to even just to get to the Grey Cup. I will. They would be my team in the West if they got to the playoffs.
It's just funny, year after year, you think he's done, and then he comes back, and he's starting again. You know, it's like, maybe he'll get his ring here. I remember in BC, I'm like, maybe he'll get a Grey Cup ring in BC. Maybe he'll get a Grey Cup ring in Calgary. Maybe he'll get a Grey Cup ring in Saskatchewan. So it's I would like for him to win a Grey Cup before his career is over, to be honest.
Yeah. Someone who will no longer be winning Grey Cups, this is sort of the elephant in the room that you and I have to talk about, is Henry Burris. He finally retired. Speaking of guys whose careers just kept going. I think I've made it pretty well known my feelings on Hank. I don't want to make this too negative, so I won't. I will say he was one of the best players to play in this league. It was mostly a treat to watch him play. I wish he would have just stuck to his play on the field and said very little off it. And that is where I will end my thoughts on Hank. What do you think about Burris's retirement?
I was a little bit surprised that I thought that he might want to come back for one more year in Ottawa, Grey Cups in Ottawa, finish his career off on that high. But to be honest, I was proud of him. I think that if he came back for another year, you're kind of sticking it to Harris. He's been waiting for so long to be the starting quarterback in this league, and that was the plan when he was signed. He would be the starter next season. He's getting paid starter's money next season. So I think Burris had a great career. He was one of the best quarterbacks of this generation. And to go out on top, with another Grey Cup, he had that one Grey Cup, and I know he had one as a backup, but you don't really count that. If you're a quarterback, you want to be the starting quarterback. So he has two Grey Cup championships, played a hell of a game in the Grey Cup this year, over 400 yards. And it was really fun to watch that Grey Cup game, and he was one of the reasons for that. So, I've had my, over the years, I've not been a huge fan, but not to the extent of you. But yeah, I wasn't, especially when he was in Ottawa and the whole Simone Lawrence thing, it was just kind of like, now I can really hate this guy. But I respect what he did on the field, and I think he was a great quarterback, a Hall of Fame quarterback.
I wrote for Three Down Nation a piece about how I feel about Henry Burris. I talked to the Ticat fans and how they feel about Henry Burris, and it was a mostly well-received piece that I wrote. There are some people who, I don't know if they read the piece. I think they just saw the headline, saw who it was written by, and said, it's a Ticat fan bitching about Burris because apparently we can't let it go. But it was one of those things that I felt, in the aftermath of his retirement needed to be said. I think there's a complex relationship between Burris and Ticat fans especially. I don't think it exists anywhere else because he left Calgary, he left Saskatchewan, and those fan bases have their ill will towards him. But I don't think he sort of burned a bridge as much as he did with the Ticats and with Ticat fans. And I don't want to make it too negative because I think you're right. He was a great player, and I'm not ever going to take that away from him. But I think his retirement kind of shows that he wasn't willing to be a backup quarterback. And I'm not saying that that's a bad thing. There's Joe Montana, Peyton Manning, Troy Aikman, all these guys that retire who are all-time greats, Dan Marino, or even, you know, guys in the CFL. Like, you rarely see guys willing to accept that backup role. Damon Allen didn't really want to accept it and retired midseason because of it. It's rare you see a guy like a Kevin Glenn or a Danny McManus who's willing to say, you know what, I'm not the guy that I was a couple years ago. I am a backup quarterback. I'm willing to accept that role with my team. Bruce wasn't willing to do that, and that's fine. That's his choice. But I think it was the right move for that franchise because he said publicly that he would have returned if he was told that he was going to be the starter next year, and he retired. Yeah. So very clearly, to me, Ottawa did the thing that they said to him. Look, no, this is Harris's team. Thank you very much for giving us our Grey Cup championship. But at some point, he's 40 years old. You have to find the next guy. You have to move on. Trevor Harris isn't getting any younger. He's already in his 30s. Who knows how long you're going to have him for? He's not a guy who's been super durable. We've seen late in the season, especially, we saw it in Toronto a couple years ago. We saw it in Ottawa this year. He got benched for poor play. It's very strange, but it's happened to him twice. He got hurt last year. I think he's going to be 31 when this season starts. It's either now or never for him. And if he would have had to sit another year, I think it could have soured the relationship between the team and Harris, and he might have bolted to go elsewhere. Maybe he's the guy that's the starting quarterback in Saskatchewan in a couple of years, and Kevin Glenn's his backup. You never know. So I think the right decision by all parties involved here was for Burst to get to go out on top, gets to stick it to everyone like you know he likes to do. He's got a pretty big ego, and this is a way for him to go out with everyone, you know, loving him because, hey, he won a Grey Cup. If they would have lost, I bet he came back. They didn't. They won. And he gets to ride off in the sunset a champion. I think it's the best of all worlds for pretty much everybody involved.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with that.
Next piece of news. We're still rolling through this stuff. This is going to be a long show, Mike. Winnipeg Blue Bombers. This is something that also happened a while ago. They gave their head coach and their general manager 3-year contract extensions. Winnipeg was, to many, the surprise of the league this year. They went, I think, 11-7. There was a very smart person on this podcast who had them pegged as a top team in the West this year, last year. And for that, you should take your bow, sir. I know it's an audio format, but take it anyway. You deserve it. You were on the Winnipeg bandwagon very early last year. And they had a hell of a season and finally looked to turn it around. And if there's one fan base that I'm actually happy for when they win, it's Winnipeg's. Even though it's a bit of a, you know, Hamilton-Winnipeg rivalry, I know what it's like. You and I both remember what it was like in the mid-2000s dealing with a team that just was so bad it couldn't get out of its own way. I don't wish that on anybody. Winnipeg looks like they turned the corner. These extensions, I think, were warranted, were deserved, and I think it looks like the Bombers could be a team to be reckoned with over the next couple of years. What do you think?
I'd have to agree with that. I think that they had a lot of patience with O'Shea and Walters, and it's paid off for them. I mean, even last season when Drew Willie was in Winnipeg and early on it wasn't going so well, I think O'Shea was probably one or two losses away from being canned. So
okay, so can I tell you a little inside baseball? So I can't tell you who I heard this from. Because it's not anyone connected with the league, but it's someone who knows Mike O'Shea. And from what he said, now he's also, and I'm going to temper this a little bit here, because he's also someone who's known to embellish things from time to time. But he said that O'Shea was under the impression that if they would have lost that game to Hamilton, you know, the game where they came into Hamilton and beat them, they had like 6 interceptions or whatever. Ryan Smith made that ridiculous catch that looked like a glitch in a Madden game.
Yeah.
Apparently, O'Shea felt as if they would have lost that game, he would have been fired. And he would not have gotten back on the plane to Winnipeg because he lives in Guelph. So he simply would have gone back to his home in Guelph. That is from what I've been told. Again, who knows if it's true or not. Obviously, they won that game and they found a way to turn their season around after starting 1-4. But that is something that I have been told, that he was going to be fired if they would have lost that game to Hamilton. So it was, and this is what he thought, according to someone who knows him. So take that for what you will, but a little bit of inside info on the Potsky Weeby show this week.
Yeah. And you know, who would have thought bringing in Nichols, Matt Nichols, I mean, he showed some flashes. He was, he was dueling for that starting quarterback job with the Eskimos before he hurt his knee. You know, he comes back, he doesn't look like himself. In Edmonton, I wasn't a huge fan of his. I didn't think that he had, I thought he was pretty much done, to be honest. And he played some really good football in Winnipeg, and he's got a new contract too, and he's their guy going forward. And to be honest, I'm still not fully sold on him, but I'm going to have to. I thought that he played great last year. I want to see what he does this year. But yeah, that was the turning point, bringing him in. They brought him in. They went on like a 7-game winning streak. And yeah, I'm happy to see things going in the right direction in Winnipeg. I think that next year they'll have large crowds, and it's going to be great. I believe that they have a great fan base out there, so I'm happy for them as well.
Yeah, it's good to see a team like that. It always sucks when it's the same teams year in, year out that are terrible. I like the fluidity of teams. You know, sometimes you're bad. It's like we were talking with the Argos situation. I understand. I want them to lose all the time, but I know that sometimes they have to be good. And if they have to be good, sometimes that means Hamilton will be bad. Like, you kind of have to live with that as a fan. The older you get, the more you recognize that. When I was younger, it's like, no, I want the Ticats to win every year. And to hell with it. I want them to go 18-0. I want every other team to go 0-18, even though I know that's impossible mathematically. But that's the sort of attitude you have. Now that you're older, you want the league to be healthy. And that means that different teams from now, time and again, have to step up and be competitive. And Winnipeg has, from all indications, a beautiful stadium. They finally have a team that's worthy of that stadium. So hopefully they can sustain some sort of, at worst, like 500-ish success, make some playoff appearances. They're in a tough division, obviously. The West division is loaded. But, you know, they were able to finish third last year, and they didn't finish far off finishing in second. They gave Calgary a run for their money, so I see good things for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers going forward.
Yep, and they almost won that West semifinal game, which had that great play by Jonathan Jennings near the end of the game where he scrambled around and dove into the end zone. So they were inches away from, you know, having a shot at going to the Grey Cup, getting into that Western final game. So we're going to have to see if they improve on this year or go in a downward spiral. I hope that doesn't happen for them.
Did you see the tweets from Corey Sheets probably earlier this month about saying he had unfinished business in Canada?
I heard the rumblings. I know that he's kind of regretted going down to the Raiders just because, you know, that terrible injury he suffered kind of ended his football career altogether. So I know that he's been wanted to get back up into the CFL, where he had so much success with the Rough Riders for a while now. And I mean, if I don't know, I think he got some looks last year and no one really signed him. So, you know, he was a hell of a running back, and we'll have to see what happens if he even gets a look.
Yeah. Again, not to pimp my own stuff, but I saw the tweet, wrote a piece about it for 3Down, looking at just who might be looking at this guy. And there are teams you can eliminate right off the top of your head. He's not going, BC re-signed Jeremiah Johnson. So they're not bringing in Corey Sheets. Calgary's not bringing in Corey Sheets. They got Jerome Messam. Edmonton is not bringing in Corey Sheets. They have James White. Saskatchewan passed on him last year. There's even a tweet out there saying, I called, they said they don't want me. So I can't imagine much would change with him being out of the football for a year. Winnipeg is not looking at him. They got Andrew Harris. Hamilton has C.J. Gable, and they've stuck with him for way too long for them to go, oh, Corey Sheets is available? Well, see you, C.J. He's their guy. Whether you like it, anyone likes it. I know there were fans on the Peace One Roads are like, no, the Ticats go after him. C.J. Gable, he can't stay healthy, blah, 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 blah. They stuck with him this long. They're not getting rid of him now. You look at Toronto.
Especially another running back that's had a major injury, you know, especially for that.
Well, that's just it. He tore his Achilles with Oakland 2 or 3 years ago and hasn't been on the field since. Like, it's not like he's coming off, oh, I was cut or whatever it may be. He's been hurt, and that was a major injury. You look at Toronto. They had Brandon Whitaker, who was their MOP nominee last year. Now, he's a free agent, so he might not be back. But and with the mess there, who the hell knows what's going on? But I would, if it's me, I'm taking the guy who was my team's MOP and who's been playing football the last couple of years over the guy that hasn't. Ottawa brought him in a year ago at a tryout camp, and they didn't resign him. So I can't really see him going there either. And that leaves the Montreal Alouettes, who have Terrell Sutton and Brandon Rutley, who are both pretty good running backs. Maybe they would be interested in Corey Sheets, but Corey Sheets is going to command some dollars, don't you think? So they just brought in Darian Durant, signed him to a big money contract. It's a salary cap league. So when I looked around, I didn't really see anywhere. The only two places I thought that maybe, and it is the slimmest of possibilities, were Ottawa and Toronto, and I don't even see them going there. So I know he wants to return, but just because a player wants to come back doesn't necessarily mean he's going to. I just don't see anywhere where he can land. Do you see a place where you would find Corey Sheets playing in 2017?
No, not really. And the way that football is now, you know, running backs are looked at as, you know, a dime a dozen type of deal. I don't believe that, but there's a lot of thought out there that that's the way it is. So to bring back a guy like Corey Sheets, who had a lot of success back in the day, I just don't see it happening, after, especially after that injury, especially at the age that he's at. He's not an old guy, obviously, but running backs is a young person's position for the most part. So, yeah, I just don't see him playing in the CFL again. I really don't.
Yeah, I wish him success in his comeback attempt, and if he finds a home, good for him. I just don't really see it happening. So before we head out, there's a couple other things I'd like to discuss. We're going to do some opinions here now. Obviously, there's been a ton of players that have been re-signed by their various clubs since you and I last talked. Ottawa brought back Antoine Pruneau and Taylor Reed. BC brought back, this is just some of the names from some of the teams, Solomon Elamimi and Jeremiah Johnson. Calgary re-signed Charleston Hughes and Cordero Law. We talked about Willie restructuring his deal. The Argos also brought back Liram Hirilahu and Anthony Coombs. Saskatchewan, Willie Jefferson, Jonathan Newsome, Ed Gainey. Montreal's re-signed Nick Lewis. Winnipeg, you touched on it, re-signed Matt Nichols. They also re-signed Darvin Adams and brought in Kenny Stafford. They're really loading up on receivers and weapons on the offensive side there. And you mentioned that Edmonton has brought back Vidal Hazelton. So out of all these moves, or even some I didn't mention, which one do you think is the biggest or most important so far that we've seen guys come back to their teams?
Well, I really like the Nick Lewis signing in Montreal. Now, he's an aging guy. He seems to gain weight each year, but the guy just produces, and I think that he's a leader in the locker room. He's a leader by example on the field, and I think he's going to bring a lot to that Alouettes receiving core. I think he's going to be a 1,000-yard receiver again, and he's going to bring a lot in the experience category.
Yeah, I like that signing a lot as well. I like the Nichols one, maybe a little bit more than you do. I'm also not entirely sold on him, but I don't think Winnipeg had any other options. If they would have let him walk, where are they going for a quarterback? So I do like the move to bring him back, and he's being paid about where he ranks. I think he's like the fifth or sixth highest paid quarterback, which is about where Matt Nichols should be in the quarterbacking hierarchy. But I think the one move that is the best out of all of them, and it is added to because they lost someone, is bringing Solomon Elamimian back with the BC Lions. Adam Big Hill has left. He's gone down to the New Orleans Saints, who are basically becoming the CFL's NFL team with all the ex-CFLers they have on that squad. But with losing Big Hill to the NFL, I think bringing back Elamimian was a must, and the Lions got it done. I don't know if they were ever really in danger of losing him, but he's signed. He's not going anywhere, and I think that was probably the most important move, because if they would have lost both those linebackers in one offseason, even with as good as BC is, and right now as we sit here, I think they're my favorite to win the Grey Cup. I really, really like what the BC Lions have built. If they would have lost both those linebackers, that would have been tough to come back from.
Yeah, and they lost Lacombo today, too. He signed in the NFL, too. So.
Oh, did he? Do you know with who?
Oh, crap. It's slipping my mind, but I know that I saw today on Twitter that he signed in the NFL, which was kind of surprising to me since he was, you know, a backup player in the CFL. But the BC Lions seem to be getting pillaged by the NFL this year.
Yeah, well, it's funny. So I'm glad you bring it up, because I want to talk about some of the guys that signed in the NFL. And yeah, now that I'm looking at my list, I wrote down five names and I tried to keep track of all of them. There's some I missed, but out of the five names I've written down, three of them are BC Lions. Two of them are Edmonton Eskimos. So Darrell Walker left the Eskimos to go to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Adam Big Hill, as I mentioned, left BC. He's now signed with New Orleans. Dion Lacy left Edmonton and is signed with the Miami Dolphins. Richie Leone has left the BC Lions to sign with the Arizona Cardinals. And Alex Bazzi left the BC Lions to sign with the Indianapolis Colts. I know there's a bunch of other CFL players that signed with NFL teams that I know Forrest Hightower, I think he signed with the Saints. You just mentioned Bo Lacombo signed somewhere. There's more, and I hate
Burnham,
myself.
I think. Didn't Burnham?
I don't think he's signed with anyone yet.
Maybe it was just a couple, workouts.
Yeah, he had a lot of guys had workouts, I think. But yeah, so there's some guys elsewhere that have signed with NFL teams. So I want to ask you two questions. First one is, which of these guys, out of any of the guys signing in the NFL, do you think is going to actually stick down there and become a player in the NFL? And which move do you think is the biggest loss for their CFL team? Are they one and the same?
You know, I was surprised with the Big Hill signing. I mean, this is a guy that's been in the CFL for 6 years. You don't usually see that after that amount of time. Usually it's, you know, the CFL for life type of deal after that long. So I was really shocked with that. Not that I don't think he's a outstanding player. I was just surprised after I thought it might have been, you know, this after the second or third year, but it's so tough to say who's gonna make a big impact, because I've been surprised with signings in the past from CFL teams that go to NFL and I think, oh, they're not going to make it, and they end up making it. And then there's been players that I thought, oh, they're going to make the NFL, and then they're back in the CFL the same season. So it's really tough to make predictions on that. But to be honest with you, I don't necessarily see Big Hill sticking with the Saints. He's getting near that age where it's you know, he might be in the prime of his career right now, but 1 or 2 years from now, he could be on the decline. So that's going to be a tough one, I think.
I think he'll make it with them simply in the same way that Eric Harris made it with them, special teams. Big Hill mm-hmm. playing specials up here in the CFL, and he's a guy who's not afraid to play special teams. He's not going to go down there being, I was a star in the CFL, I should be. No, he's a humble dude. I think he's going to make it, though. I think the biggest loss for any team, I think, is Darrell Walker. I know the Edmonton Eskimos still have a Darius Bowman. They have Brandon Zylstra. They have receivers, but Darrell Walker in his 2 years in the CFL, like those numbers were Earl Winfield. Like it was ridiculous how well he played. The fact that he even played up here, you're looking at it going, like, that's just insane. Like, how was he passed over in the NFL? And I think he's got a great shot to stick with Tampa Bay. They have a couple decent receivers down there in Mike Evans and Vincent Jackson, but Vincent Jackson's getting older. They got a young quarterback in Jameis Winston. Walker and Mike Evans, who Mike Evans is the star receiver of that team, they were teammates at Texas A&M, so I think that's probably why he got a shot with the Bucks. I think he's got a good shot to be a number two receiver in the NFL, and I think we've seen the last of him in Canada. And again, with all these guys, as we do every single year, I hope they all make it. I hope they all succeed. I think Ricky Leone's got a great shot of sticking with Arizona. The guy's a fantastic punter. He's not going to be their place kicker. He's just going to be their punter. And that guy has a booming leg. Like I said, I guess I want all these guys down there to succeed. I think, you know, the more guys that can go from the CFL to the NFL and succeed will bring a higher class of player to the CFL, because they'll look at it and say, mm-hmm. man, these guys were pretty darn good up there. They got a shot up there. They used it like you said, Big Hill was up here 6 years before he got a shot. So I want to see them all succeed. I think I don't know how many of them will, but I think Darrell Walker, to me, I would be shocked if he is not at least a very good number two receiver in the NFL for a very long time.
Yeah, thinking about it now, after you talk about Leone, I think that he has the best chance, and I also think that Walker will stick in the NFL. But, you know, they bring him in just as a punter. This guy has an NFL leg. Putting the ball, I think he will be a starting punter for that team in the NFL for years to come, because you just look at his punting and it was incredible to watch last year in the CFL.
Yeah, he was flirting with all-time numbers. So if he could do that in the CFL, he can just as easily do that in the NFL. And I think he's got a very long career ahead of him as a punter in the National Football League.
Yeah, and it's different, right? It's like, punting in the CFL is punting in the NFL. You're kicking the ball, right? So it's not, you know, being a linebacker or being a receiver or whatever. It's pretty much the same thing.
Yeah, the only difference is field width and field length, an extra guy, but again, it's still even numbers. It's not like you're kicking to 13 guys and you have 10. Like, it's still an extra. And the thing is, too, is like in the CFL, you have to do both. And he was a, at best, mediocre place kicker. He can mm-hmm. simply focus on punting, where he was probably the best in the league last year, without a doubt. He can do that in the NFL, and I think he's going to stick down there for a very long time.
Absolutely.
Mike, that is it. We have gotten through all the relevant news, both Ticats and CFL-wise, that we have missed over the last month. We have to make sure that we do this again a lot sooner, because my, mm-hmm. oh my, was that a marathon, not a sprint.
Yeah, it's, we're tracking at about an hour and a half right now. Now, we talked about 10 minutes before.
Yeah.
Yes, but Yeah, we'll have to get together, unless not like a month
Yeah,
away
a
or
much more
something like
frequent
that.
schedule.
Yes, exactly.
All right, sir. So, like we do before we end every episode, I just want to make everyone know because, hey, maybe we pick up some new listeners. New year, new listeners. The show's on iTunes. You can subscribe to the podcast there, or you can listen to it or download it when it gets up on 3downnation.com. We didn't do questions this week, but we are always open to questions from our listeners. So if you want to ask Mike or myself a question that we will answer on the show, you can hit us up on Twitter. Mike, as I say every time, your Twitter handle, please.
Mike_Ticats.
And you can find me at joshsmith_82. And if you have a longer question that doesn't fit in the 140 character limit of Twitter, you can always post your questions in the comment section on the post at 3downnation. So for the first time in 2017, I get to say that was episode 66 of Podski Wee Wee. I am Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.